Maybe this year, your dreams are a little bigger than before. You might be dreaming about a safer car, a new home, or the kitchen of your dreams. CME, Ohio's number one credit union, believes progress starts with understanding your options. You can explore your possibilities in minutes when you see what you qualify for at cmefcu.org. And best of all, there's no impact to your credit. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing lender, federally insured by NCUA. Visit cmefcu.org for details.
Welcome along to the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour. We're going to go straight to the big one now as the Rebels take on those Limerick villains in the Gaelic grounds tonight. That one is throwing in at 7, of course, and hopefully it should be a great encounter, especially after the brilliant day we had in the Gaelic grounds last year with the Munster Championship final win. And to preview the game, I caught up with Matthew Hurley of the Southern Star. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by my good friend Matthew Hurley of the Southern Star. Matthew, who are you anyway? How's life treating you?
Yeah, all good, Dan. I suppose it is an exciting game tonight between two great rivals, Limerick and Cork. Probably the importance of the game isn't as talked about in the build-up to the game, obviously, because Cork are on the verge of a league final. Limerick, it might be more important for them, to be fair. They're at 6 points at the moment. If they win tonight, then they're almost starting of a league final themselves. So it's a difficult kind of game to comprehend in many ways. Obviously, you want to beat Limerick. Obviously, it is a Munster rivalry at the end of the day, but it's probably the one game that Cork could stomach a loss, if that makes sense.
Oh, I 100% agree. Let them have this one. I'd even give them the league final if we earn one anyway, Matthew. Let them have a cup over us anyway in that regard. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. A lot of people saying there might be a lot of shadow boxing, but given the rivalry, given the stuff with even Seamus Flanagan in the league last year, I know he's not playing tonight, obviously, but like, it's a tasty rivalry, and I feel like it's kind of maybe died off ever so slightly, but I don't think it's going to take much to spark this one into life tonight, even if there's really nothing to play for.
Maybe not so. And look at the team that Ben has put out. It is a relatively strong team, I would argue. Like, Owen Downey's there. Daryl O'Leary, who's played the last few games, is in there. Patrick Collins is in there. Obviously, Brian Hayes at full forward. That's a big call from Ben O'Connor to bring him right back into contention. Barry Walsh deservedly gets his start as well. There's a mix of youth and experience tonight. Obviously, Shane Barrett is there. Tim O'Mahony is in the team as well as captain, which is great to see. Shane Kingston's there as well. So look, Cork do have a very good team out, but you look at Limerick as well. Like, Limerick have an extremely strong team. Obviously, you mentioned Flanagan, he's not there tonight, but like, I'd argue Shane O'Brien is probably a well able replacement for him. He's been absolutely sensational in the league so far. Aaron Gallant been brilliant. Obviously, Peter Casey isn't there tonight, but David Reedy able replacement. Darrell Donovan is injured, obviously, after the Offaly game last weekend. But look who's coming in at number 9, Keane Lynch. So yeah, it's a tasty enough team Limerick do have out. And it is arguably probably going to be their strongest team come summertime as well. Arguably other than Peter Casey and David Reid at 15. But other than that, that's going to be Limerick's strongest team in the championship, I'd imagine. So it is going to be interesting to see how these Cork youngsters park up against these Limerick lads tonight. Having said that, though, there might be a bit of shadow boxing considering Cork do have Offaly next week. With the greatest respect to Offaly, Cork should beat them at home, so they might be in the league final already mentally. But Ben O'Connor said at the start of the year that he wants to win every game, and this, because of that quote, that's what makes tonight so interesting. Does Ben want to go for the Joker tonight? Does he want to lay down a marker against Limerick, or will he just maybe lay it off a small bit and let Limerick have this victory? It's going to be very interesting to see.
What would you do? Like, it would be fantastic from a Cork point of view. Like, it's their strongest team, effectively, or very nearly anyway. And we'd have a lot of inexperienced lads in our team. If you were to get a win over them tonight, that's a huge statement for the year ahead, especially after the high they're coming off that tip game where they look so impressive.
It would be a statement of intent because Limerick have performed absolutely brilliantly in this league campaign. Obviously, the Offaly game, they weren't at the races at some stage. They probably didn't need to be fair. But the games against Tipperary and the game in particular against Kilkenny, they were absolutely sensational on the ball, Limerick. especially like the likes of Colin O'Neill's, Dean O'Connor, the Shane O'Brien's, Colin Coughlin's, the players that would be probably on the fringes over the last few years, the youngsters, have really come to the fore for this Limerick team. And that's a big boost to John Coyley. The likes of Aaron Gillan and Gerard Hagerty are still contributing a small bit as well. So like, Limerick are absolutely flying. From a Cork point of view, it would be brilliant to win, to lay down a marker number one against the side that is flying, and number two, to keep the momentum going. Like, if you keep the momentum going, I know it's very hard to do that throughout the whole season, it is a long campaign, but if Cork can manage to keep the winning run going, then anything's possible later on in the year, even to win another league title. Maybe that's what Ben is thinking in his mindset, that they need to keep it rolling and keep performing to the highest of their ability for as long as possible. That could be a bad point for later in the year, though, considering teams do get tired. Like, you look at it over the last year. Like, a prime example in the league and the championship. Remember Waterford in 2022? They were absolutely brilliant in the league. They won the league. Then in Munster, it was almost like they tired out a small bit. I'm not saying it will happen to Cork. It definitely didn't happen last year when they won the league title. But there might be a warning sign there that it does happen to other teams, that they take the league a bit too seriously, and then they start to go down in form when the Munster Championship hits, especially when the first two games are against Tipperary and Limerick. That's going to be massive for Cork in the Munster round robin. I do get keeping the momentum, but maybe keeping a bit of the energy might be something that Cork may need to think of as well. But at the same time, if they do win tonight, it might be an opportunity against Offaly to play even more fringe players next week. Like, I think before the Kilkenny game, I counted, Cork used 28 players in the league, which was very, very positive in three games. I'm not sure the exact number now. It might have gone up to maybe 29-30 with Barry Walsh and Alan Walsh coming in. But if they were to be in that position against Offaly, where they're already in the league final, even more lads will get some more game time, which is a brilliant positive to have for Ben O'Connor. It does give the likes of the Brian Hayes, the likes of the Tim O'Mahony's, the likes of the Darragh Fitzgibbons, even more rest before the Munster Championship as well. And it's interesting tonight, I think Alan Connolly playing every minute up until this point. He's not playing tonight, which is very, very interesting to see. Maybe Ben is resting him. So that might be a positive, I suppose. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the attitude of the Cork players and management is going to be this evening.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic league campaign from a Cork point of view. And you'd have to say one of the biggest positives from it, he's given absolutely every single player a chance to get in and play game time and show off their skills. And like the forward line in particular, he's going to have some headaches come championship trying to decide that starting team.
He was having headaches, to be fair, Dan, when it came to the squad. Like the amount of players that were left out of the squad. Like, I can even think of Sean Desmond, Watergrass Hill, Jack O'Connor, Sars, Keane Darcy, Sars. Those are top quality players. And for Ben O'Connor to leave them out, it does epitomise how much quality there is in the 36-man squad at this present moment in time. Like, even look at the forwards tonight, Alan Walsh got a goal for his very first touch last weekend. Barry Walsh, I know he's only under 20, but he's a very, very talented player from Killa. Even the likes of Shane Kingston, who is very, very experienced, I think that's his first, it might be his first meaningful action tonight. So that probably, it probably does epitomise the amount of talent that is in this Cork team at this present moment in time. Even in midfield, what I like about this midfield tonight, I have to say, Kieran Joyce and Tommy O'Connell, two players that would be predominantly enough halfbacks, but they've been converted into midfielders. That's great options for Ben O'Connor in the summer, because obviously you have Darragh Fitzgibbons there, you have Tim O'Mahony, but you have these lads that can step in to the role as well. Obviously Mark Coleman's out injured, but Micheál Mullins eating two main tonight. Even the way he's giving lads opportunities in different positions is what I'm pleased with Ben O'Connor. Eating two main would normally be a midfielder or a half forward, but this year he's gone into wing back and he's performed absolutely brilliantly so far. Owen Downey's gone into centre back, full back. There may have been issues there, obviously, in the All Ireland final. He didn't have his best day. But Ben is prepared to give players a chance at performing at different roles rather than just one set role, which is very, very impressive, I have to say. Even Micheál Mullins from Glenrovers, playing wing back tonight, he could easily slot in the midfield for Glenrovers. I've seen him at club level. He's an absolutely brilliant player. So the options about versatility is what pleases me the most, to be fair. Even Barry Walsh could play full forward. He's playing at number 10 tonight. Will he play there exactly? I'm not sure. Even the likes of Shane Barrett, normally number 11, he's playing number 15 tonight. It's a mix and match, which is very, very good to see from Ben O'Connor's team. And it does give Cork a bit of variety. You can't win All-Ireland Championships and Munster Championships while playing the exact same way in every single game and expecting players to play in the exact position, because you become too predictable. We arguably became too predictable in the All-Ireland Final last year, where Tipperary had a sweeper and they absolutely cleaned us. So, like, to have this variety, I think it's very, very positive from Ben O'Connor, not just to use the players, but the fact that players are playing in different positions.
What do you think are the biggest matchups going to be tonight? I'm looking forward to seeing Joycey mix it up with the likes of Keane Lynch there in the midfield. But it could be a huge day for Daryl O'Leary of Watergrass Lily in that full back position with Shane O'Brien on him.
It's going to be a massive test for Dara. Like, he's a very, very good player, has performed well at club level, has done well for Cork at periods as well in the past few seasons. But Shane O'Brien is an absolutely sensational hurler, Dan. He, like, against Tipperary, I counted, he got 6 points, 100% shot accuracy. He also got 6 points in assists. That's 12 points in scoring contributions. That's absolutely sensational. And even last year, I thought he was very, very good, Shane O'Brien. Probably underrated. And the fact as well, he wasn't playing for the latter stages of the championship because he was carrying an injury. I think that was a massive loss to Limerick, not having him there. Because you look at Limerick's team then, like, you have the likes of Adam English and all them there. They were performing well. But, like, you didn't have Aidan O'Connor last year, you didn't have Cathal O'Neill for most of the season, you didn't have Shane O'Brien. Those three players have come in and they've changed Limerick hurling in their performance level this season. They've been absolutely sensational. So, like, Dara will have his hands full on Shane O'Brien. I absolutely agree with you. Kieran Joyce in midfield, having a battle with Adam English potentially, that's going to be massive as well. Even Tim O'Mahony up against Will O'Donoghue. I know that might not be the exact case this evening. They might deviating positions and all that, but Tim is a very, very direct player. Will O'Donoghue has been absolutely sensational in the league as a rock solid centre back for Limerick so far, so that'll be an interesting matchup as well. Even looking at us number by number, I know obviously positions could change as the game goes on, but Kyle Hayes is set to come up against Barry Walsh, according to the match programs anyway. That's going to be very interesting because Barry, obviously, he's a very good player. He's very talented, very direct. He's an absolutely brilliant runner, but he's still a young player. Kyle Hayes is very, very experienced. So it'll be interesting to see how Barry does square up to him. If Shane Kingston up against Dermot Burns, it should be very interesting as well. Owen Downey against Aidan O'Connor. Aidan O'Connor's got 39 points in the National Hurling League so far. And obviously, you have Owen Downey there who has performed well at stages in the last few seasons. But if he performs well on Aidan O'Connor tonight, I think a lot of people will sit up and take notice and applaud Owen for his performances. Even the likes of Alan Walsh on Barry Nash, even a smaller kind of matchup like that, that'll be very interesting to see as well. And what'll be interesting as well is the puckouts. Like, Nicky Quaid, I think, got assists in puckouts against Kilkenny. He got 4 points in assists off puckouts against Kilkenny in that game, and 3 points in assists against Tipperary as well. Cork will have to watch his sharp puckouts in particular and make sure the likes of Dermot Burns aren't in space to puck long, even the likes of Adam English and Conor O'Neill around the middle there. So a lot of interesting matchups this evening and a lot of interesting kind of tactical things to watch out for as well, including the puckouts with Nicky Quaid in particular.
Hopefully I was there thinking at the start, oh sure, Jesus, we'll hand him the win, but geez, after thinking about all that, it could be an absolute cracking night of hurling in the Gaelic grounds. Hopefully we will get one. Matty Hurley, lastly, I know it's always the toughest question, can you give us the match prediction for tonight?
Just because I'm not sure Cork will be up to it and because there'll be a bit of shadow boxing going on, I'm going to say Limerick will edge this game. Mm-hmm. But if Cork take it seriously, I think they could rattle Limerick's cage this evening. But whatever happens, I think it'll be an exciting evening of hurling, as you said.
Brilliant stuff. I do agree with you. I think Limerick might just squeeze it in the end. But anyway, Matthew Hurley will soon find out. Thanks, Mill, for joining us, as always, on the show.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, that was Matthew Hurley of the Southern Star there chatting to me, previewing Cork versus Limerick, thrown in 45 minutes time. The teams have arrived at the Gaelic Grounds. We're going to hear now from Ben O'Connor after Cork's win over Kilkenny last week.
Morning as well.
Right, it was a performance, tough conditions out there. Got a deep performance out of it. Everything they started and subs came on, the difference itself would be like there's nobody out of the way and nobody under others.
And Ben, Kilkenny, you ran at Kilkenny quite a number of times, opened them up, could have had a couple of more goals. That'll have pleased you. Kilkenny tried to do the same, but your backs, in fairness, stood up very well.
Yeah, we could have had a few more goals, but our keeper has a couple of great saves the first half, in fairness, and like. And I suppose with the conditions that were out there, even with the breeze, it was hard to take a shot with the way it was swirling across the field. So the only option is to put up the hurling run and try and get into a better position. And I suppose it took us a while to get it going, but when we did, with a couple of good moves, but we've left to work on. It was only the first of March.
Well, still, your work rate now was impressive, the way lads were running off the shoulder and that. And that's what you want to see, players eager and hungry, because as lads today were net to knock out for various reasons, so competition is really strong.
Our competition's hot. We've 37 on our panel, so that means it was 11 fellas now with a few injuries, but 11 fellas weren't even talked out today. We can all go on 5 out of the 26 today. So look, that's what it's all about, and fellas are after buying into this. If they're getting game time or not getting game time, they have something to offer and keep driving fellas on. So we have a great bunch.
In terms of the league, how important do you put on given the cost of the championship?
We want to win every game, but it's a league challenge, whatever it is, we want to win every game. If that happens, brilliant, and if it don't, we'll just dust ourselves out and get going again.
Been a huge crowd there today again. A lot of guys signing autographs afterwards as well. Probably a huge crowd in Limerick again next week. Just how important is it to you?
It's just brilliant to have a deep crowd behind us, especially when you're putting in performances like that and like twadding the list on thing, and it wasn't the nicest of days for it, but it was just great and determination. And look, that's all we're asking for ever for that. And Kilkenny got the same out of it. It was right in the melting pot right up until the end. But yeah, our support is unreal. When we went up to Galway, there was over half the crowd Cork, and here again today there's half the crowd Cork with 31,000. 3 weeks ago in Cork with 21 for the Waterford game. So look, well, we know how well we're supported, and we don't want to let anyone down. Like if we come out there without putting up performance, people travelling down, spending money to get down this far, it would have been a shame. But thanks to boys, they dug it out.
Could you feel it off the crowd there towards the end, because they probably felt you should have been out of sight a bit earlier than you were?
I suppose, and when we got a couple of scores from Barry, got the goal, like to be a great cheer with up, and then we went 10 or 12 minutes without a score and we got the next score. That gives the fellas a fierce boost when you hear the crowd behind you. But we're delighted with them. And look, no matter where we go, we've fierce crowd. We're just great supporters, no matter what's going on, they're still seeking behind us.
Turn goal was patient because the way the game was going and the way decisions were going, anything could have happened. So yeah, they were within striking distance, but in fairness, he was only on and bang, back in the net.
Yeah, straight in, first ball into the end of the goal, yeah, and it was vital at that stage because with the breeze, all Kilkenny had to do with that stage was tap over 2 points. But when we got the goal, I think that put us up as 4 or 5 minutes time. So then at that stage, they needed a goal as well. Like, so it was a lot of long ball just being hit in the open for all the many years.
Ben, we've seen teams before, kind of top of the league are doing well, put the handbrake on, but you're obviously, you don't give that impression at all that it's going to happen. So you want to do that with this Cork team?
No, if you're above the training next Tuesday night, you'll see the competitions as they play. So does any fella that puts a handbrake on his team left behind? And that's just the way it is. We're not minding ourselves. We're driving on full belt. Any fella that's minding himself because he thinks he's going to get injured, so he could get injured any day of the week, or it could be anything could happen during the day. So our fellas are just driving on, they're made for training, made to be involved.
And then like that competition, I presume, is what allows you to make 9 changes and give 3 fellas the first start without any fears about them, like.
I didn't even realise we'd 9 changes now. I'll tell you the truth, yeah. He said to me before the game, I know we'd a couple of injuries, but I didn't realise we'd 9 changes from the last set. And that's just the way we pick teams. You go out and pick a team, we don't look at who played last or whatever, like.
Yeah.
We pick fellas on training during the week, and that's the way it is.
And I presume the same this week now. Everyone will want to be playing in the Gaelic Grounds next Saturday night, like, and can only bode well for the team you do put out, like.
I'd like to be playing myself, so if I'd like to be playing, I'm sure all the fellas inside there would like to be playing, like. But it's just competition in the group, and a good healthy group at the moment. You fellas may be back this week from injury now, so it will add more pressure to getting on the 26 for the match there. But look, that's a great place to be.
Great first start from Barry Walsh.
I am sure delighted for Barry. I suppose he came in, he'd done a lot of the early season training, then he got an injury, so he'd been out. So he had a couple of games for AGMTU freshers that sharpened him up. He played with the 20s a couple of weeks ago there as well. So look, Barry's only waiting to get in here. We'll see what he done, and more experience Barry gets, the better he'll get to.
Ben, we heard that, or we had it confirmed last night, that the new 30-metre descent free is going to come in for the league finals. Just your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, he's the Wizards are. No, he's really the referees have had enough job, not to mind for his rolling show here. They'll make mistakes, we'll make mistakes, so why not?
Brilliant stuff from Ben, absolutely box office presser as normal. Moving on to the Cork City FC side of the house, and it was a disappointing enough draw against Cove in St. Conan's Park last night. And now leave City on 10 points from 12 in the SSC Ayrshire First Division. And to chat to me about it all, I was joined in studio by Harry Hayden, making his Big Red Bench debut. And Cork City drew 1-1 with Cove Ramblers in Cove down at St. Coleman's Park last night. And to chat about us here in studio, we have Harry Hayden. Harry, you're hopefully going to be around the Big Red Bench studios a lot more often, so it's great to have you around. But how have you made a City season so far? A poor enough affair last night by all accounts.
Yeah, I suppose their 100% winning record had to stop somewhere, like, and I suppose Cove probably wasn't the place where you wanted to start. Obviously the first Cork derby of the season. I mean, like, you know, they were very impressive against the big game, I suppose you'd look at would be the Wexford away game. They were really impressive in that game, like a big away win. I think Wexford as well made quite a big statement the week before, winning quite comfortably at Cove. But yeah, it was slightly disappointing yesterday now, obviously dropping points to Cove, and in the manner that they did it, the fact they were obviously in front as well through Seanan Maguire early on, and it was probably quite a soft penalty you'd look at that Cove got back into the game through. But overall, I suppose you can't complain too much. The fact they 3 wins, 1 draw, they're still, I think, 3 points clear of Athlone, I think, who are currently in second, so you can't complain too much from Barry Robson's men.
What have you made of their season as a whole, and maybe the manager as a whole, Barry Robson? He seems very impressive when he's speaking to me, to the media. We're going to hear from him in a small bit. What have you made of the tenure so far? Maybe his manner—it's a lot more. It's a lot different to the Jornash experience we once had.
Yeah, he feels a lot more like a football manager compared to Jornash, who I kind of felt was maybe a bit more of a coach at times. And you have to give him credit, I think, in that he has come to a new club, a new city. He doesn't seem
new
to
country.
Have new country. Yeah, doesn't seem to have many coaching with him. It looks like he's kind of come on his own, and even personally for him, like, you know, he's probably had to leave family behind in Scotland, or, you know, is probably living here on his own, and he's kind of just got down to work, got down to business, and, you know, I think he's made quite an impressive start. I think his lineups have been quite attacking at times. Like, I think there was maybe a concern when we signed Mbongo that, you know, would we kind of play with him, Keats and Maguire, but he's played with all three up front, and I think, yeah, you have to give him credit because he's just settled down, and you know, they've only conceded 2 goals in the 4 games. The defence looks a lot better than what it did last year. I suppose in defence it probably couldn't get much worse than what it was last year as well. But overall, I think most City fans would be pretty happy with him, but I suppose it'll depend what happens at the end of the season. That's how he'll be judged, and probably it'll be more
be
in the Premier Division if of course we get there, and of course if Usher keeps him on, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. What have you made of our strike for so far?
That's exciting. Like, it's obviously, I think we were quite surprised when especially when City were, you know, falling down towards relegation, when it was, you know, it was basically confirmed in July last year that we were going to be a First Division club. I think most City fans would have been expecting a First Division campaign without Seanan Maguire and without Rory Keating, so it was quite obviously a big shock, especially when we saw the rumours about Seanan staying, obviously after the rumours about him going to Rovers and Bows in the summer. But it's exciting, obviously. It's a strike partnership that's probably way too good for the First Division. I don't think many Premier Division teams wouldn't take Seanan or wouldn't take Keats in their team, and the two of them obviously have started really well. Obviously Seanan Maguire, I think he's on 4 goals or 3 goals now, I'm not too sure, I can't remember, and obviously I think Keats has got 2 goals as well, and obviously Mbongo, who's arrived from Finarps, has been able to get on the score sheet as well. I think maybe the only concern you could say is they maybe are slightly a bit light in midfield, but certainly the attacking wise is definitely as Premier Division in the as possible.
The summer window, how are you I know it's a bit away from, yeah. It's not too far away either. How are you approaching it if you're Barry Robson? Do you just build for the Premier and just get these guys in on a year and a half long contract? Now maybe that does mean there are more guys in from the UK who maybe don't care as much as if they were maybe League of Ireland or Cork players in general.
I know, it's a difficult one to approach because I think you do sort of have to look into the future in the Premier Division. You'd hope by the summer with the strength, certainly they have an attack and the squad in general, that they would have the league somewhat wrapped up by then, or certainly have a nice gap between them and whoever's in second. Like, you know, you kind of look at Dundalk last year, they kind of constantly had Ramblers on their tails last year, and you'd kind of hope that wouldn't happen in the summer. So you kind of hope that they can just look towards that summer transfer window. I think it's difficult to know because you don't know whether they should bring in young players, whether they should kind of, as you said, go towards the UK, you know, maybe get some more loan players in. I know they've got AJ Bridge in this year. He hasn't played too much, obviously. We kind of know, obviously, they got quite a few loan players last year, and some were good, some, you know, Kit Nelson, he was a decent purchase that they had on loan. And then you kind of had the other guys like Charlie Lutz, who was just, you know, just an absolute disaster of a signing. So it's a difficult one to approach. I think my personal aim would be to try get someone who's maybe Premier Division proven, someone who, you know, is maybe in between, maybe not in between both leagues, but has experience in the Premier Division, because that's kind of what they really need. I know they've got huge experience in Greg Bolger in midfield, but you know, you'd imagine it'd be very difficult for Greg to still be there next year, but you never know, obviously. But I would say certainly in the summer transfer, you just have to look forward towards the Premier Division and try get some sort of experienced players in. Because, you know, it's very difficult in that you'd imagine we can't be in the same situation now coming, what, in 2028, that we're back in the Premier Division and struggling. So, you know, we really need to make sure that when we get promoted this year, that we stay up.
Absolutely. One person who, in my mind, is relatively Premier Division proven is Matthew Murray, but yet he can't seem to get into the squad. He gets into the squad, but he can't seem to get into the team whatsoever.
I know, it's bizarre because like when he broke on last year under Jonas, I suppose he's probably one of the few shining lights in that season, which was obviously quite tough. And that's kind of a common theme of the last few years, really, for City, the amount of youngsters we've produced, even though maybe the club hasn't been performing at the level it's been hoping for. Matthew Murray, I mean, like, he obviously made a huge, you know, when he got a goal in his debut against Waterford. It's weird. I suppose the kind of formation he's been playing, maybe he hasn't been able to fit in that way. He's kind of always been playing with sort of three up front or two up front, and sometimes Mpongo's almost been playing as a wing back. And he's kind of been playing with three at the back, with obviously Lyons, Fikre Kelleher, and Roy Feely at the back. But Fikre obviously went off injured yesterday, so he might revert back to a back four, and maybe that might make a bit of room for Matthew Murray to come into the team, because he signed a new deal. I think that was even a shock. I think some City fans maybe were expecting him maybe to get a move to the UK or whatever, but he signed a new deal. He's here for this year. You'd imagine while he's here, you should at least use him, develop him as much as possible, and get him ready for the Premier Division, or obviously if he goes on to a future move.
Absolutely. What have you made of Cathal O'Sullivan's move to Preston North End? Long touted for a while, to be fair, but it's finally gotten over the line and finally sorted. Well, what did you make of it? Seems to be a bit of a connection between the two clubs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's, you know, Seanan McGuire, Alan Brown, obviously Kevin O'Connor, even like loads of players who've made the jump from Cork to Preston, and obviously Kit Nelson and Kane Kamara last year came on loan. But it's an interesting one. I mean, it's probably a bit of a letdown for him personally, in that he maybe would have been looking for that move for Crystal Palace, you know, Celtic, Nottingham Forest. They were obviously all interested in who you would say, you know, Premier League, Scottish Premier League clubs, you know, clubs who are a bit bigger than Preston North End, which is obviously no disrespect to Preston, but it's still a great move from, I think, you know, Preston. They're having a decent championship season this year. They are kind of one of those sort of safe championship clubs, and you know, maybe they struggle to kind of break away from the mid-table pack, and they always kind of, you know, maybe sometimes they make a small push for playoffs but never really get in there. So I wouldn't, you know, I'd imagine as well he's also going to go over now knowing some people, that he'll obviously know Kit Nelson over there and Kane Kamara, which will help obviously just to settle in. But I think for him personally, he'll obviously just be wanting to get back from injury as soon as possible, and once he's back from injury, then looking to make an impact in the underage teams, you'd imagine at first, and then hopefully he'd be kind of eyeing up a first team debut. You'd imagine maybe this season might be too early for him, certainly though next season, especially pre-season for Preston, you'd imagine it'd be very big, and I could definitely see him getting into that team soon, because he's got tremendous talent.
Longford Town next week. It really doesn't get any bigger than that one, does it?
I know, it's just depressing, is it? Like, you look at every Friday, you look at the Premier Division, you're like, oh, Bowes now, and Bowes going good, and even Derry, you wouldn't mind Derry coming down with James McLean returning and him coming into the cross, like the sort of reception you get, and then you look at City's fixtures and we're playing Longford.
Longford,
and they bring, you know, their five away fans, and it's just like, oh, gosh.
Look, at least it's not going up and down the M7 and 8 every single week.
Sure, we get a few country roads that we've never knew existed before on, but yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Well, Harry, congratulations on your Big Red Bench Red FM debut, and you were absolutely fantastic. And listeners will be hearing a lot more from Harry, hopefully, in the coming weeks, months, years, maybe even.
Cheers. Thanks very much, Dan.
Yeah, great stuff from Harry there. Let's hear now from the gaffer Barry Robson after City's 1-1 draw with Cove last night.
And I said to my players, if you can't go and win it, make sure you don't lose it. Now, it's a difficult venue to come and play in. You've got boys trying really hard, they're throwing subs on. I think we had 5 transitions today. I thought we were going to kill them on, and they fouled, which is fair play. And I think they got 4 or 5 bookings from that. But credit to them. And another day, maybe we would have scored a goal. I've not spoke to him. I've not seen him yet. I've seen him with a big bandage on his head, but it was a one, and it doesn't help when you lose him early on in the game as well. No, I didn't. I didn't think. Well, Conor Brand has not had one save. So, yeah, if the game there, we've not. So for my thinking, they've got a penalty, but not one save we've had to make in the game tonight. Although I didn't. By the way, I didn't think we were at our best. I didn't think we were at our best, and I think that's down to the way the opposition tried to play the game. But there was spells in the game that I thought we were very good, especially the last 25 minutes.
That's fine.
It looked like Shawnee Maguire could have had a penalty shot there. He was pulled to the ground in the second half. Referee gave a free out.
Yeah, listen, I don't know how you speak about referees, but I didn't think it was a very good game from him tonight. I'm not sure the penalty, our one was. I'm just being honest. I think there was a lot of... We had 4 or 5 transitions and they just fouled, and we were in the dangerous areas, and they just fouled, just cynical fouls, which sometimes you get a red card for some of these. But listen, as I said, credit to them. They tried to put the game they did. Loads of boys over 5-6 foot, go long, get up on the second ball, play direct, try and play off scraps, and they dragged us into that game for about 30 minutes, for about 35 minutes today, and then after that we were alright.
It's something, I suppose, you have to get used to, Barry's teams raising their game when quarter three comes down.
Yeah, and listen, I've no issue, like, credit to them. I think they put 5 subs, they had 12 players on the pitch at one point. They're throwing everything at it, they're fouling, they're trying to get a set play, and it's frustrating. Because, as I said, like, Conor Brand's not had one save to make in the game, and we lose a goal through a penalty, which is pretty dubious.
Barry, obviously after the penalty, the team just kind of dropped a bit of momentum. Did you put that just fully down to the kind of trying to drag you into the game?
I think so. I think I thought we started really well in the game. I thought, yeah, we're really at it here, and then credit to them, they started to break the play up, slow it down a wee bit, a couple of long throws, they got a few set plays, they got their tails up, and try to, as I said, drag us down into that game, and that's something we need to be mindful. We need to be careful with that. But what I was pleased about was our fighting spirit. We went to the end. We ran the game for the last 20-25 minutes without really being in our cutting edge best, and because over the last few games we've created some really good chances. But we've been better than what we were tonight. But as I said, coming at a difficult place like this on a derby, and as I said, if you're not going to win the game, make sure you don't lose it. And we did that, and I thought we were pretty comfortable in the last 10 minutes there.
Did you feel you were going to nick us?
Yeah, I thought so. I was hoping so. We probably didn't have our most clear cut chances that we've normally made, so, and that doesn't always happen in games. We're not going to make that 5-6 great chances that we've done over the last couple of days, last couple of games. We're not going to get that all the time. Listen, we're still unbeaten. We've come a really hard place, and a few weeks down the line, that could be a really good point.
And the referee's whistle has gone for the first half, but stay with us for a second as we have a Cheltenham preview. Get those notepads ready. Welcome back to the Big Red Bench here on Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next half hour or so. And there's a fever going around, Shetland fever, that is. Lads absolutely desperate to hand the bookies their money this week. But to hopefully help stop it, John Duggan of Off the Ball caught up with Connor, horse racing pundit Jane Mangan, to take you through the festival as well as her dad's runner in the biggest race of them all, the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Enjoy.
Jane Mangan, we are here at the official Cheltenham Preview Night, sponsored by William Hill, your William Hill ambassador. There is huge excitement in your family about Cheltenham next week, I believe. Spillane's Tower, let's assume that he runs in the Gold Cup. It's been a real journey with this great horse.
Yeah, it's a journey you hope you're only not even halfway. It's immensely exciting to have a horse worthy of an entry in a Gold Cup. I don't think psychologically we've gone there in our heads yet that it's happening until you're safely across the water and he's here himself. But he's a good horse, and I was on a panel recently where Dan Skelton gave Grey Dawning a good chance. Well, if Dan gives his horse a good chance, then we have to say we have an each way chance. It's a very deep race, but we're very happy that he's good enough to come, and I know my parents are very happy with him at home since he won here in January.
And is there excitement in the local community in Cork as well about it?
The genuine is, there's a lot of tickets have been bought from the village. There's a lot of people going to travel from Connah and around the surrounding area. We are a national hunt country in East Cork, so I know a lot of them made the journey to Liverpool last year when he didn't run, so I hope for them this year that he does.
Does Spillane's Tower have the attributes you believe to be a Gold Cup contender?
I don't know what a Gold Cup course is because I've never had anything to do with one, but I'm told they need to have class, they need to stay, and they probably need to be versatile, and I think he is tactically versatile. I know he likes an ease in the ground, but I don't think it's an absolute must for him. I don't know if he'll stay the 3-2. That's a big question on his pedigree. But we know he stays 3 because he did in January. So he's got class. He stays. He's a dual Grade 1 winner. Why shouldn't he be there?
What do you think the biggest storyline is, Jane, for Cheltenham 2026?
Probably diversity in yards. We saw it through the season. I think we've seen a number of young UK trainers start to make their presence felt, start to make an impression in the higher echelons of the game. I don't think William Mullins has had it all his own way at home this season, and while no doubt he'll have any number of winners this year, I think Gordon Elliott's going to have more than one, like he did last year. He's going to have more than one. He won last year, he's going to have more than one this year. I think there's going to be a couple of good storylines for you and me to talk about because there's going to be diversity in connections.
When we look at the first day, the champion hurdle, you've got the new line in there, won last year, Jane. Brighter Days Ahead is going for the third time to Cheltenham, hoping for third time lucky the mare. Maybe Lossie Mouth will run. You got Poneros in there. How do you assess the champion hurdle?
It's not a great race. If Copec de Bord was in it, he'd be favourite. I think the new lion has 8 hurdles to jump, and they're his biggest danger.
What about his profile? He won the 2.5 mile last year, which sometimes with Hardy Eustace won that in the past, can be a good trial for the Faheen, won it for the champion hurdle the following year. What do you like about the new lion?
It's just he's winning. Bar his fall, he's winning. He's probably 2.5 miler, but the same can probably be said for Lossie Mouth. I don't think Poneros is good enough. I don't think Anzadam is good enough. And I could see Golden Ace being the solid, all reliable, making her presence felt again. But I think the new line on his right day has her measure if things go right. But he's not. He's an edge of the seat kind of jumper.
What about Majbra as a jumper? Do you think his jumping has improved enough to go better than last year's Arkle and win the champion chase this year?
Well, it depends on which impression you take. If Leopardstown horse turns up, he wins. He's somewhere between El Fabiolo's silliness and Moscow Flyer's streak of craziness. He's somewhere in between that. He has an absolutely enormous engine. I think he could take some fences with him, but once he stays upright, he'll win the champion chase now that Marine National is out. I suppose it's the common theme here is the 2 milers, the speed, the jumping is the question mark, because of course it's the question mark, it's speed, it's risk. He's a great horse.
What about the Stars hurdle then? Bob Ollinger won last year. Henry de Bromhead is happy with his preparation. TOP won it a couple of years ago in the same ownership, Brian Acheson. And then there's English challengers as well. Dan Skelton has won. What do you think when you look at the 3 mile championship at the moment?
That's a deep race. Cabral de Mathan, Machantou, Honesty Policy. That's a good race. Chupo's probably a worthy favourite, but I'm going to go with his stablemate to beat him. I think the 6-year-old Honesty Policy, second season novices, have a decent record in the race, and I'd be with him. I think Bob Ollinger probably got an exquisite ride last year. It was probably underestimated just how good Rachel Blackmore was on him to win last year, and it's a big ask for an 11-year-old to do it again.
You've been on television all autumn and winter, Jane, looking at the Gold Cup contenders. Obviously, Spillane's Towers is close to your heart, but what horses are close to your head in terms of looking at the opposition, in terms of the who are the top contenders for you?
It's a good way of putting it, close to my head. I don't rate the King George. I don't think it's actually a good trial for the race. I know Cato Star springs to everybody's mind, but in the interim, it hasn't actually had a good record of translating to Gold Cup winners. Galloping de Champ is still the horse they all have to beat, in my mind. I think the pace of the race is going to be pivotal. If you have Auti Calor, Jukebox Man, a number of horses pressing a relentless pace up front, it could set it up for a closer. And I hope Jack Kennedy will be picking them off one by one.
And if Jack is riding, that'll be very much a benefit for the Spillane Tower connections and Jimmy. What about Galloping de Champ? I mean, if he did win, it would bring the house down.
Yeah, it would. We were here last year. We just presumed it was his coronation. There was murmurings that I know the way you're thinking was good, but nobody really believed, well, I certainly didn't, that he was going to foil the 3 in a row. But he's still only 10. He's never been over-raced. And I think he's got, listening to the Clissutton team, he could still go off favourite.
How do you assess the novice hurdlers and the novice chasers then from an Irish perspective? Do we have a strong hand?
I don't think it's ever been more unknown, because a lot of racing has been cancelled and a lot of horses are coming in here with one or two runs, like Mighty Park. Sure, how can you quantify him? You're going purely on reputation. I think the Dublin Racing Festival form stands up. I think Talk the Talk, Ballyfad, King Roscoe Gray, all three of them major players wherever they go. Skylight Hustle the same. I think Willie Mullins has been slow to come to the boil this year, and as a result the poor punters are left guessing.
What about the handicaps, Jane? I know you like to spot one maybe at a price. Is there anything that you're in when you're looking at maybe the declarations a few days out, do you think, you know, that could be an each way play for somebody?
Yeah, I think Put Your Hands Together, wherever he goes. If he goes to the 2.5, he's been out of form since he won the Fred Winter here last year off 130. I like him for Joseph O'Brien. And I think also in the colours of JP McManus, you have me in stitches. If that mare goes for the Kim Muir for a small operator in James Motherway, I think that would have a great chance.
That horse, is a child of Lucy Cracker.
Correct.
Which was an Irish Grand National winner back in the day. We were rudely interrupted here, Jane, by the massive machinery here at Cheltenham just a moment ago, so I might just get you to recap the champion hurdle. You think it's about the new one? The new lion, even. The new one was Imagine Twist and Davis, yeah. So the new lion for Dan Skelton.
I don't think the new lion or Lassie Mouth are genuine 2 milers. I think they're probably 2.5 milers, but if they're ever to win a champion hurdle, it will be 2026. It lacks a real star, and I think there's 8 hurdles for him and Harry Skelton to negotiate, and I think they're his biggest danger.
Do you think that Brighter Days Ahead is suited to Chapman?
You can't say that she's not suited. She travelled well to the Bend last year. She cut out completely. I'd say there was an issue. And I think the race was tactically wrong for her in the Mare's Novices. But I think she likes soft ground, and I don't know if she's going to get it here. That's a big worry for me.
The bumper is always a race for talking horses. Can you work it out?
The bumpers in Ireland this year have been notoriously uncompetitive and small. It's very hard to quantify. I obviously respect Willie Mullins. His record is exemplary, but I don't think there's too many trainers are better at training bumper horses than Noel Mead. And the fact that he's booked Colin Keane for the Mourne Rambler, Leopardstown winner, point-to-point winner, that gives me a lot of confidence in that horse. And I think if he was in a... Like, it's hard to say, because Noel Mead was a multiple champion trainer, but if he was in Willie Mullins' yard, he'd be short of price.
When you look, Jane, at maybe a horse to follow for the week, a banker, and maybe in each way, what are you thinking at the moment?
I'm thinking Majra is the banker, as the machinery kicks off again. And I think my each way play... probably you have me in stitches in the Kim Muir.
How has Cheltenham changed for you since you first came here? What changes have you seen to the meeting, the Irish Challenge, and the general experience?
I'm lucky every time I've been coming here, John. The Irish Challenge has been strong. I know you can't say the same, and I know, you know, I've heard all the stories where we used to come here with one or two chances of a winner. I remember winning the Prestbury Park every year. But I suppose myself, I got to know better strategically how to manage the build-up and not come into the week completely flat energy-wise, because it's a monster. And the build-up to the monster is nearly as big as the monster itself. So it's wonderful to be here, and I'm so happy to be part of it. But it's a little bit like riding a race. You have to ride to get home.
Well, hopefully you got a few tips there for the Cheltenham Festival. That was John Duggan of Off the Ball speaking to Cork's own Jane Mangan. Moving on to a bit of rugby, and in the Six Nations, if you haven't heard, there's plenty of drama today. Scotland beat France 50 points to 40 in their clash, while Italy have only gone and done it, and they've beaten England an amazing 23 points to 18. But going closer to home, it is now time for the Energia AIL update.
Energia AIL updates on the Big Red Bench. With Energia, think of the possibilities.
So in Division 1A, Cork Conn lost 26 points to 28 against Ballinahinch. In 1B, UCC lost out 12 points to 13 against the Dublin University, better known as Trinity. And Highfield lost out 21 points to 24 in their clash. While Ballincollig beat Cook away from home 24 points to 19 in the women's AIL. And Energia updates are with thanks to Energia. Think of the possibilities. Moving in from rugby to a bit of boxing now, unusually. And there's a huge fight and a huge week ahead for the Cork man, Stephen Cairns, who takes on his opponent in the Three Arena this coming Saturday. All right, we're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by Cork boxer Stephen Cairns. Stephen, we have a fight coming up now in a week's time. How's preparation going for that one?
Yeah, I'm excited for it. Preparation's been great. I've been over here in the UK for the last 12 weeks. I've been away from home, a lot of things sacrificed, diet, training, away from my family. But it's all gonna be worth it next Saturday night when I get my first title as a professional. I'm fighting for the WBA Continental title. So yeah, man, it's gonna be a special night. I can't wait.
The Three Arena is a pretty big venue for yourself. Is it the biggest arena you've fought in so far?
I've fought in some big arenas. I've fought in like big arenas in Liverpool, Manchester. I fought in Uzbekistan. That was a pretty big arena out there. But this is like, it's like the mecca of Irish boxing. This is like the grand stage of Irish boxing. And when you're growing up and you're going to boxing fights, this is where you want to fight. And it's just such a privilege to be able to actually fight here, fight for my first title, and showcase my skills to the world and to Irish boxing.
Is the last bit of the hard work done now?
Yeah, so I've done for the last week. I've sparred 2 10-round spars against 2 good fighters, 17-1, and another guy 11-0. So I've been getting some really good preparation in. I've sparred the current European champion Josh Padley as well. So I've got some, like, this week has been tough. 10 rounds, when you're obviously your food's coming down and stuff like that, you don't have as much calories. But I've been able to dig deep, and get the work done. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling more than ready. And next week when I have all the carbohydrates in me, nobody's safe.
Is it just about getting the weight down now at this stage, a week out?
That's it, yeah. So like, that's you've probably seen or heard fighters say it before, but sometimes the hardest part is actually not the fighting or the preparation. All that stuff is fun. It's the dieting, it's the getting down to the weight and weighing scales, it's the tough part. But I've a really good team around me. I've got a good nutritionist, got a good strength and conditioning coach, and everything's gone to plan. So please God, everything goes smoothly.
You're fighting Archie Dawson, but that wasn't so smooth initially. You had another opponent before him. Will that affect you at all?
No, Jesus. Sure, look, I prepare the way I prepare, and whoever they put in front of me, I have one job, and that's to seek and destroy, take him out. So that's my plan when I go in there. It's a little bit of different styles, but I'm a fighter. I've fought and I've sparred lots of different styles, so it's nothing new.
Do you watch much tape of the fighters you come up against, or do you just focus on yourself?
I mostly focus on myself and our game plan of what we do. But obviously you have a look at your opponent, you see what kind of weaknesses he has, what's he open for, what's his good shots to take away from him. So, yeah, I don't watch too much of it. I leave that down to my coach. He comes up with a game plan. I follow suit. I do everything I need to do, and I just focus on what I can control.
What can the fans expect from a Stephen Cairns fight?
Fireworks. Every single time I walk again to that ring, I'm looking to take my man out. When I win by points, I'm not happy. But again, I would take a win by any means necessary. But as when I go in there, I'm looking to take him out. Don't be just make sure you keep your eyes on it at all times.
And what's the support been like for you surrounding this fight and your career in general, to be fair, Stephen, especially from the Cork public as well, of course?
Yeah, unbelievable. Like the support we've had this time now from Cork, we have like 800 Cork fans travelling up.
Wow.
For this fight, which is amazing. The arena sold out. There's going to be 9,000 fans out there. But like the support from Cork, to have that many people travel up 3 hours, it's no joke. And I'm grateful for everybody who's bought a ticket, coming up to watch me, to put on a show. And I hope everybody enjoys the night. But this is just the start of what we can build, because if we can get 800 people up to Dublin, imagine how many people we'd sell in Cork. So that's what I'll be saying to the promoters after this fight, is we need to get a show down to Cork.
Yeah, we're in badly need of one. There's some great Cork fighters around at the moment. Yourself, Tommy Walsh, or Callum Walsh rather, Tommy Hyde. It's Cork boxing scene is in a good place at the moment.
Unbelievable, yeah. It's the best it's ever been. And I think a show, like obviously we're waiting on this event centre to be built for the last 10 years, so I don't think it'll be anytime soon. But we've got the marquee in summer, and can you imagine a boxing ring in the middle of all the stands and everybody coming in? I reckon the marquee would be a savage venue.
Well, that would be class. I know they're doing the darts there this summer, so maybe more sporting options in the marquee would be good one to see, all right?
Yeah, and like as you said, so everybody's going down there for concerts, and I'm pretty sure everybody would enjoy a couple of some fighters trying to take each other's heads off. It's always entertainment for the fans.
Brilliant stuff. Well, Stephen, best luck with the fight. Any last words again to the Cork public before we depart?
Just thank you so much for all your support, for everybody online on my social media, and every single person who's bought a ticket to come up and support. I want to hear you guys loud in the arena when we come out, and every punch we throw, you guys are there right behind me, and I'm going to go get this win.
Oh, Jesus, brilliant stuff, Stephen. Fair play to you. Where can people watch the fight if they don't have a ticket in?
So you can watch it on DAZN. That's DAZN. And it is going to be live streamed. It's one of the biggest platforms in the sports world. So I don't think they will have any trouble trying to find it.
All right, Stephen, take his head off. All the best, my man.
Nice one, bud.
Speaking of people taking their heads off, they're getting ready and down in Cork versus Limerick in the Gaelic Grounds. Tommy Rooney is looking ahead for it.
Limerick and Cork meet in the TUS Gaelic Grounds for round 6 of Division 1A of the Allianz National Hurling League with a 7 p.m. throw-in. It's a lovely night for hurling with temperatures at around 10 degrees at 6 p.m. and a hint of a breeze. Cork are top of Division 1A with 4 wins from 4, with Limerick just behind them in the table on 6 points, having lost their opener to Waterford. John Kiely has made 4 changes from their win against Offaly the last day, and it is a strong team he has named for tonight. Will O'Donoghue, Dermot Burns, Barry Nash and David Reedy all return. Darrow Donovan and Peter Casey have both been ruled out through injury. Ben O'Connor has rang the changes for this evening, making 8 switches from their win over Kilkenny. Neither captain Dara Fitzgibbon nor vice-captain Mark Coleman start, so Tim O'Mahony captains the side at centre-forward. Damien Cahalan and Shane Kingston are set to be the 32nd and 33rd players that Cork have used in this league campaign. Having suffered a 16-point reverse in the round-robin stages last May at the hands of Limerick, Cork went on to win the Munster final here on penalties against Limerick in the Gaelic Grounds. This could of course be the first of many meetings between these two across 2026. There's potential of a league final in early April, and their round 2 clash in Munster is scheduled for April 26th in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Throw in today for Limerick and Cork in round 6 of the 2026 National Hurling League is at 7 p.m.
Well, hopefully there'll be a big win there. Elsewhere on the Camogie side, Cork beat Kilkenny earlier in the Central Camogie League. Rachel Sheehan had the full-time report there for us.
Cork have got their first win of the 2026 season with a comprehensive win over Kilkenny in today's Division 1 Camogie League clash. It finished Kilkenny 9 points, Cork 1-15. The Rebels' win will be overshadowed, however, by what looks to be a serious injury to veteran midfielder Ashing Thompson. The five-time All-Star has scored 2 points from play before leaving the pitch with an arm injury with 55 minutes on the clock. The Rebels got off to a flying start, but with a strong finish to the second half, only a puck of the ball separated the sides at half-time. Kilkenny 4 points to Cork 7. The outstanding Saoirse McCartan opened the scoring in the second half, but the Cats found another gear and landed 4 unanswered scores to level the game. But that was it from the Kilkenny comeback, as last year's league winners hit 1-4 without reply. Orla Cahalan pulled first time and netted a cracking goal that put the visitors out of sight. It's a first defeat of the year for Kilkenny, who now sit second in the league table and face leaders Waterford next week. Cork, meanwhile, will be glad to get a win under their belt and welcome their experienced players back into the starting 15. Final score here in St. Loughton's, Kilkenny 9 points, Cork 1-15.
And we're going to hear now from Cork Camogie captain Maeve Cahalan, who's speaking to Rachel after the win.
Maeve, how are you feeling after Cork's first win of the 2026 year?
Oh yeah, look, it was brilliant, you know, to get over the line. I suppose the ultimate goal coming up here today was to get a result, and you know, we did that, and I thought we finished really strong. You know, our fourth quarter there was brilliant. We worked really hard and just delighted to come out on the right side.
You got off to a very strong start. Hayley Ryan, who was really, really good throughout, scoring within the first minute. Is it something you'd set off for to get a strong start?
Yeah, look, I suppose, you know, the forward set the tone, and you know, the full forward line there today. I know Hayley set out with a score, but even the work rate off the ball, you know, I think they really put the pressure on the Kilkenny backs coming out. And I suppose they set the tone for us then at the back, and we kind of got to grips with things then and got into our flow. And Laura Hayes was superb there with her deliveries, and you know, it's great to have Saoirse and Orla back as well, so the three of them inside were dynamite.
Yeah, Laura was brilliant. It's probably a position that was open when we had Laura Tracy's retirement this year, but she's filling those boots.
Yeah, and look, Laura Tracy's a colossal loss. You know, she's been the leader there at the back for so many years, and you know, it's obviously a huge loss for us and sad to see her go. But in fairness to Laura Hayes, she's, you know, come in and she's took it in her stride, and she had a brilliant game today. And you know, it's great to have her back as well today. She missed the first couple of games through injury, so you know, I know she was hungry and really looking forward to getting back, so it's just great for her to have such a good game under her belt now.
Yeah, so many players coming back, like Laura Hayes, Orla, your sister as well, Saoirse McCartan included.
Yeah,
how much of a difference does it mean to have that kind of experience?
Oh yeah, like it's even great for the girls, you know, that have been coming in and you know, trying to lay down their marker. Probably makes it that bit easier for them when they have a few more experienced girls around them, just to, I suppose, guide them and you know, show them the way that we play. But look, training the last 2 weeks since the Antrim game has just been through the roof. We've had a couple of girls back, and the intensity has just gone up. And a credit to the management team as well. You know, they really prepared us for this game, and it was the sole focus of the last 2 weeks. So look, delighted to get out on the right side of that now, and look forward to Tip now in the next game.
And Kilkenny did manage to come back level. You know, they scored 4 unanswered points, but we had Ashling Thompson get an unbelievable score to kind of settle the ship. But unfortunately, looks like a pretty serious injury to her there.
Yeah, look, it was awful to see Ashling go down. She looked in a lot of discomfort, and you know, you never like to see a player, you know, for that to happen, a player during a game, and especially a player of her caliber. But look, she's the type of player now that will do anything to try to get it right. So hopefully, look, she has the medical team there behind her, and hopefully she can get it right, because she'd obviously be a huge loss. So hopefully we can wish her a speedy recovery and we can get her back onto the pitch as soon as possible.
Big announcement during the week for the club All-Stars. Orla nominated, and Saoirse, who came back in today, in the mix for club player of the year. Must be proud from the Bears to have such strong representation.
Yeah, it's brilliant. We have 5 I think from the club. Look, I suppose such a good year for us. It's great for them to get recognition. Brilliant for Saoirse to be off for player of the year. You know, she had an outstanding year. And I suppose, look, there's 5 girls nominated, and you maybe could have nominated another 5, but you know, it's brilliant for them. Hopefully they'll have a great evening above in Crow Park, and you know, get to celebrate the great year that they had.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Yeah, brilliant stuff there, and that concludes the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey signing off. Marty Kilfoyle is on the way next.